Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello everyone, Kitro here. Welcome to another episode of TSFP Presents Super Seasons. It's the final episode of the series which was originally recorded in 2019, and we thought we'd go out with a bang with one of the most fiery, explosive seasons in recent La Liga history. It was perhaps the apex of the Guardiola-Mourinho rivalry, the 2011-2012 season. Next week, we'll be re-releasing another TSFP Presents series from our archive, so make sure you download that. But for now, enjoy today's episode. Hello patrons, welcome to the final episode in TSFP Presents Super Seasons. We've had what I hope is a super journey through the years over the last 35 years or so, looking at some of the most memorable campaigns. We've delved back into the archives the last couple of episodes to go a bit further back in history. We're coming back to a more recent...
Back to the future.
Back to the sort of near present, yes.
I mean, it's still the past, so yes. Just to be clear, this is still the past. Is it? But yes. It's the most recent season that we've done.
Yes, it is. And it is the 2011-2012 season, the records season, the League of the Records. Obviously, Real Madrid winning the league title. Rather surprisingly, it's not something that's happened over the last decade or so, but they won the title under Jose Mourinho with a 100-point haul.
And there is also so much more to talk about in this season, sort of beyond the title race. I know a lot of these episodes have focused on the title race, but this is one of those where there was all sorts going on.
There's
right the way through the table.
There's a lot going on in this season, yeah.
I arrived in Spain with Al just after this season as well, so we were coming off the sort of the fallout of this season.
It was like this season inspired us.
There was quite a lot of fallout as well.
Yes, that's one way of putting it. Anyway, so the background to this season, obviously Barcelona had won the league title the year before,
and the year before that.
Real Madrid had finished second in what was Jose Mourinho's first season.
Yeah, Jose had arrived, made lots of friends, you know, really brightened up
the
place.
Well, I mean, pretty much the first thing he does is poke Tito Villanova in the eye.
This season,
yes. And Valencia had finished at third again under Unai Emery.
But here's the thing, Valencia had finished third under Unai Emery. Are you ready for this?
Go on.
39 points behind Real Madrid.
Wow. So...
In this season.
In this season.
You mean, yes. Okay. So they...
No, we're talking about the past season.
Now we have gone back to the future.
Yeah. But you're right, Sid. So this season, to put that in some context, this season, Valencia finished closer to the relegation zone than they did to Barca in second.
Yes.
That's how big the gap was. Yes. And that we'd never seen a gap like that.
This was the point, admittedly. It was an extraordinary season in many ways. And it was a season where Levante were top after 9 weeks. And that was really quite exciting for a while. But it was a season where you started to worry about the dominance of the big two, perhaps even more than ever before. Because you say, Real Madrid get to 100 points. You've had Barcelona then, of course, matched that the following season. At that point, the first, second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh and eighth highest points totals in La Liga history had all happened in the previous 4 years. You'll notice that's eight in 4 years. In other words, two teams had been the highest points total in history every year for 4 years.
I mean, that does feel like a real fundamental change in the
And at that point, it did start to feel like this is the end.
Competitive.
Well, I mean, this is a start. At the start of the season, the president of Sevilla at the time, José María del Nido, actually comes out and says, This is rubbish. This season is no good. There's no point in this. We don't want to do this anymore. And of course, what happens is the start of the season is so good that everyone says, oh, Del Nido's wrong. because, as I say, you've got Levante top after 9 weeks. You've got Madrid and Barcelona seemingly struggling to kind of really get into a stride. But then when they do, they just don't stop.
So, as we always do, mention who was in the league for this season, the 2011-2012 campaign. Betis had been promoted after relegation in 2009. Rayo back after 8 years in the Segunda. And Granada promoted after 35 years. So we had some big returns to the top flight. The 20 teams then were Atleti, Barça, Espanyol, Getafe, Granada, Levante, Malaga, Mallorca, Osasuna, Racing, Rayo, Betis, Madrid, Real Sociedad, Sevilla, Sporting and Valencia, with Villarreal and Zaragoza.
Notable, of course, no Galician teams in that list, because Depor had been relegated after 20 years the previous season. So you had 4 teams from Andalusia, 4 teams from Madrid. We're seeing, you know, the Madrid kind of region start to dominate. We haven't done this for a while. Do you want to do some shirt sponsors very quickly?
Bring this
back for the last episode. As always, fastest answer wins. Who was the shirt sponsor this season of Getafe?
Burger King.
Oh, yes, Kitro, just about needed. Who was the sponsor of Espanyol?
Maya Rivera? Rivera Maya?
Connected to that, but...
Mexico? Cancun?
Yes. Cancun. And for 3 games only, what appeared as the shirt sponsor of Rayo Vallecano? For only 3 games.
Oh, wow.
It was related to something sort of topical that was... Something that was coming out that they were publicising around.
Was it a film of some sort?
It was.
X-Men? Spider-Man?
No.
You're on the right lines in superheroes. It was the Avengers.
Oh, wow.
Los Vengadores. And there was an amazing press release that I read that was put out by Martin Presser, the Royal President, saying, yeah, you know, our team really represents the Avengers. We're a group of individuals who've come together to work as a team. It was the most magnificent PR
pillock. Yeah. I mean, this my particular favourite was, this is not this season, but now that we're on this kind of thing, obviously because of his connections with the cinema, Enrique Cerezo, the president of Atletico Madrid.
Yes.
Atletico had a deal with TriStar for a while, and they would rotate different shirts, different sponsors on their shirts. So you had Hellboy, and anyway, one of the ones they had was a film called Closer. But it was in that era when they were disastrous. And there's a lovely photo that always made me laugh more than it probably should of Fernando Torres wearing the shirt, and the arm is across the sea, so it just says "loser" on the front of his shirt.
I mean, also, even if it's the film I'm thinking of, that film Closer is quite sort of a sinister, sort of erotic thriller. So it's a weird one to have on your shirt anyway.
I didn't know that. Right? Okay.
Yeah, I think so.
So the contenders for the title, obviously Barcelona. It was Pep's fourth season in charge. They brought in Alexis Sanchez and Cesc.
Mm, the Cesc saga was a lengthy one. That was one that went on and on
and sort of broke your heart a little bit.
I mean, that's, let's not even get into that.
Well, I mean, this, you know, we loved him. What a brilliant player he was.
I mean, I won't go into this, but just briefly.
Let's go into it briefly.
Like, I know that Barca fans ended up having sort of a real problem with Cesc and sort of criticising him, and he wasn't happy and he left. Let me just emphasise that for Arsenal, he was genuinely the best midfielder I have ever seen. Mm. He was. And that
apart
is not
from Santi Cazorla.
Well, you know, at that point, let's just say that, and more of Santi coming up in this pod, by the way. But Cesc for Arsenal was whatever ended up happening, he was magnificent.
By the way, I mean, his first game, you know, he scores and he sets up for Messi to win 3-2 in the Spanish Super Cup, which is when, of course, Mourinho pokes Tito Villanova in the eye.
It was Barca's first season with a paid sponsor. Highlighting the good work done by the Qatar Foundation.
I mean, it's one of my favourite foundations, the Qatar Foundation. It really,
So there we go. They had won the Champions League, obviously beating United at Wembley. And the question here that Al has highlighted, was Messi at his peak?
I mean, it was. This was peak Messi, wasn't it?
Peak? Extraordinary.
I mean, I know it's almost
50.
50 league goals.
It's not like he's dropped off, but yeah.
But the curious thing about it, this outlier season, even for Messi, because of course over the whole season he scored, what was it, 90 something?
Over the year, it was 91.
Stupid numbers.
Yeah.
His outlier season is the season when they don't win one of the major titles.
I mean, and again, it's a familiar theme, but you know, this is when the numbers of Messi and Ronaldo started to redefine what we consider a good goal-scoring season.
Yeah.
You know, we've come from talking about Romario scoring 30 goals as being a brilliant season. All of a sudden, you've got Messi scoring 50, Ronaldo scoring 46.
I mean, that is ludicrous.
It was Mourinho's second season in charge of Real Madrid, as we mentioned, Jorge Valdano had just been sacked as the sporting director.
Yeah, they didn't get on, those two, did they?
They didn't like each other at all.
Hmm. They didn't go mad in the transfer market. They bought in Nuri Sahin.
They bought him and then it immediately established that he had like a disc in his back that was... He had a really serious back injury and was immediately injured.
It's a pity because he was a really nice player.
A much better investment was Rafael Varane.
I mean, that's one of the great transfers, isn't it?
Who was brought in
as an 18-year-old scores on his debut against Barcelona with this absolutely amazing header.
And talking of great transfers, one of a TSFP fave at left back, Fabio Contrao, was brought in.
Wow.
And La Liga would never be the same.
It would never be the same.
Valencia, Emery, of course, who'd sort of really established himself as a Valencia coach. They'd finished sixth, third and third.
Well, and he'd established himself while every year they sold their best players as
well. So, you know, and yet the fans still hated him.
They'd lost Villa, they'd lost Silva in the past. This summer, they sold Juan Mata to Chelsea for a lot of money. They sold Isco and Joaquin to Malaga. So, yeah, Emery kept losing all these really good players. Kept doing pretty well and kept getting stick for it.
And he got a lot of stick for it. I mean, this was the year where he got a letter. Later on in the year, he got a letter from the Valencia Federation of Supporters Clubs. And the letter basically said, "Dear Unai, we don't like you. Off you go." Hmm. That was a letter saying we're not satisfied with you. There was always a sense that it was a bit conservative. They didn't win games against the big teams. They didn't bloody the nose of Madrid and Barcelona, which I think fans would have liked. And I think this might even be the year that Unai Emery brings out a book called Winning Mentality. And that was kind of, I think for some fans, that was the last straw, because they're effectively saying, come on, you're the biggest loser of the lot in terms of your attitude, in terms of your approach to the game.
I mean, fast forward a few years and you've got Gary Neville in charge, and you'd miss the good old days of Unai, even though they hate him now because of the famous celebration for Sevilla.
Yeah,
and
but it's true.
Atletico Madrid had old Barry Manzano in charge.
Mm.
Yes, he'd take
one of the familiar old faces of Spanish football. He's been around the block.
Yes, he took over from Kike Sanchez Flores.
Who had done sort of okay. They'd won the Europa League under Kike Sanchez Flores, hadn't
they? Of course, this is the beginning for Atletico Madrid of this current era.
Well, and that summer was a really big summer. You had Aguero going to City for massive money. You had De Gea going to United, and they bought old Radamel Falcao. One of our favourites.
What a brilliant player he was, by the way, for a short period. But this season was absolutely extraordinary.
It's funny, I was thinking, do you remember, Phil? I remember sitting and watching, it was the following summer, but watching the UEFA Super Cup against Chelsea the following year. Falcao scored a hat-trick in that game. And I remember just thinking, this guy is just he's the perfect striker.
Yeah, it was absolutely fantastic.
They'd also brought in Thibaut Courtois on loan, Arda Turan and Miranda. So they'd done some serious business.
Yeah. Atletico, when they got rid of Manzano later in the season and put Simeone in charge, I went and checked this. It was their 49th managerial stint since 1987.
Wow.
That's a lot.
And yet they've not had any more since then.
Yeah.
Simeone's longevity is extraordinary anyway, but in the context of Atletico Madrid, it's absolutely amazing.
We should also mention amongst the contenders, Malaga. Because this was when they were a really boom club. Altani had bought the club a year earlier. They had old Manuel Pellegrini in charge. They were the biggest spenders.
Yeah.
That summer was their summer. So they bring in Ruud van Nistelrooy, Julio Baptista, Santi Cazorla,
Cazorla was 19 million.
Tulalan.
Nacho Monreal as well. Isco, who we mentioned. So there was a lot of money in total.
This was a whole lot of money, but it was also reasonably well spent, this money. See, they had Antonio Fernandez in as a sporting director who'd been at the Federation. He'd been at Sevilla with Monchi. He's theoretically the guy that actually discovered Dani Alves. And they were really quite sensible. A lot of money that they couldn't have, and eventually they didn't then go through the financial troubles the following year and the year after that, when they were trying to comply with UEFA fair play rules. But they built a really good, a genuinely good team.
The big storyline from this season then, of course, is Pep against Jose.
Yes.
At its best.
Or worst. Yeah.
It really was what sort of dominated everything, all-consuming.
It did become a little nasty. A lot. It did become actually a bit tiresome as well.
Well, I mean, you know, Pep got sick of it, didn't he, by the end? That's part of the reason. I mean, you know, who knows? He might have moved on anyway because maybe it was time to move on.
I think it was already a season too far. And the players, although they don't admit it to the extent of actually being aggressive in the way that they say it, the players admit that they were a bit tired of Pep. And that Pep was certainly tired of them. And there's a phrase from Guardiola when he goes, and the phrase is something along the lines of, "I have to go or we're going to end up hurting each other."
Mm.
And I think actually in some cases that had already happened.
I mean, Mourinho did actually hurt Tito Villanova by poking him in the eye in the Spanish Super Cup.
I mean, that,
Super
Cup. That is still like one of the lowest.
You know what I think is even lower than that? Seen, yeah. What I think is even lower than that is the banner that then appeared at the Bernabeu along the middle tier, and it said, "Jose, your finger points the way." Immediately after that, and you know, as when it comes to bad taste,
and I mean, and that was, you know, at the same time as that was going on, you had in that Spanish Super Cup, you had Marcelo being sent off, you had Ozil and Villa being red carded, even though they were already had already been subbed, so being red carded off the bench for their parts in that.
It kind of set the tone for the rest of the season in a way.
That was also a really good Real Madrid team in that. In that they were one of the interesting things. I mean, let's try and put this in footballing terms rather than just in terms of the personality. It was also a fascinating battle between Pep and Jose in terms of the styles. These two teams could not have been more different stylistically, given that you're talking about teams at the very top level. Obviously, you know, in teams at other levels, you can see sort of different things that they might approach it differently and so on. But in terms of, you know, two really good teams, Barcelona, everyone knows what the Barcelona philosophy is, but that Mourinho team, I think, was the purest expression of Mourinho's ability to build a team that's really, really dangerous in what people are now calling transitions, what we would have probably called counter-attacks. Incredibly fast, very, very direct, brilliant in terms of playing, playing kind of two or three-man counter-attacks from one end to the other. It wasn't just a long ball up the top, but it was very, very direct, very quick, very aggressive. And they were, when they got it right, which they did for a lot of this season, they were really, it was really exhilarating.
I mean, we
talk
about the League of Records. They scored the most goals ever scored in a league campaign, 121 goals.
I think the previous record was 107, so they didn't just beat it, they smashed it.
So, you know, you had Ronaldo scoring, whatever it was, 46. You had Higuain scoring 22 and Benzema scoring 21. You had Mesut Ozil, who had a very, very good season.
Is that Benzema's best league season? I think it probably is, isn't it?
Ozil laying them on a plate for the, it was a really
and
it was
the speed of the counter-attacks, and that was where I think there's sometimes a misinterpretation. You get someone like Ozil or Benzema, you think, oh, they're really technical players, they're really, really good in tight spaces. They would suit Barcelona. I think they probably would. But actually, they were the perfect kind of moment of clarity in those fast counter-attacks. So the counter-attack would go through them and there'd be people bombing beyond them.
I think
them.
Ozil had something like 17 assists in the league that season. Yeah.
It's funny because people may or may not like Jose Mourinho, and he remains one of the most divisive figures amongst Real Madrid fans, perhaps ever, certainly the last few years. But I think one of the things that almost everybody universally recognises as his major achievement is not only this was a record-breaking La Liga season for them and they won their title, but they beat this Barcelona side. They did it against this Barcelona side. And I mean, even Madridistas will say
And if you look at the numbers, you know, we're talking about Real Madrid beat the previous goals record. So did Barcelona. So this was a Barcelona team that, yes, it did. It's true that it let itself down a couple of key moments. It's true that they could have been closer. But actually what happened was you had two teams hammering out enormous numbers of wins, scoring huge amount of goals.
I mean, I didn't go back and check how many seasons Barcelona's points tally of 91 in second would have won the league title. I'm pretty sure
it would have basically been all of them except for the previous three or four years. So, for example, remember Manuel Pellegrini, his first season at Real Madrid, 96, I think, or 97, and didn't win the league when it would have won every other league ever.
Yeah.
And that's not quite true of this Barcelona team, but I think it's every league except three up until then.
Quite extraordinary.
In terms of a title race, it wasn't exactly a race because Madrid, I think, went top 10 games in and stayed there until the end of the season.
Yeah, although they never really got away from Barcelona until, of course, they go to the Camp Nou.
That's match day 35.
Cristiano Ronaldo scores to make it 2-1. I think that puts them 7 points clear. And that's basically the end.
But Barcelona had won at the Bernabeu in December 2011. This was my first ever Clásico. I was there and I saw Benzema score.
Is that the 3-1 where Cesc scores?
Benzema scored after 21 seconds.
I don't know how many seconds it was.
It was the first Clásico goal.
I remember that because it was a giveaway from Valdés. And I remember this as being an expression of an idea, of a philosophy, which is that Valdés gives the ball away, and at that point you think, every time it comes to him, just hoof it, son. And he never did, and he kept on playing. And one of the Barcelona goals comes from a move that starts with Valdés playing it out. And you sort of think, that's vindication for this apparently risky approach of that the goalie has to play.
Just on a personal note, I'll never forget the sense of occasion there at my first Clásico. But I'd been to a lot of football matches.
It does wear off after years, doesn't it?
But it does, the first one is amazing.
Especially, as you say, given that this was the best ever Barcelona team against one of the best ever Real Madrid teams.
Yeah.
Hmm.
You know, this was the time when the Clásico really was the Clásico.
Classic, yeah. As we said on match day 35, Real Madrid went to the Camp Nou and beat Barcelona by those 2-1 with that iconic calma celebration from Ronaldo.
And it's Barcelona are in the Real Madrid penalty area on the edge of it, and it's a long hoof up the pitch, and I think then it's Osil who turns and plays a wonderful pass. Just one pass cuts the whole Barcelona team open. Ronaldo running through, steps away from Valdés, and from not a very tight angle, but a slightly tight angle, cuts it back into goal. Yeah, and you're right, it's then that, I'm here.
Yeah.
Leave it, I'm here.
And Madrid hadn't won at Camp Nou in the league since 2007.
I've got a feeling Ronaldo might not have scored there in like 7 visits or something, and from that moment on start scoring consistently.
Yes, because there was still a narrative of him not doing it
in big games, yes.
I remember that when I came
here. That's been pretty well buried, hasn't it?
Yeah, but when I came here in the season after this, there were still people suggesting it, and it was duly pretty much buried. So, yeah, we mentioned Levante, who went top after 9 matches. Really, really extraordinary for them to have such a season.
Seed in his end-of-season roundup, he used the phrase, the joy of Levante, which was surely the first and the last time that those words have ever been uttered.
They were extraordinary, and they talked about how they built this team of kind of cast-offs, players that no one else wants. They were football's expendables. My particular favourite with them was Kone, the striker, who'd come from Sevilla, where he'd failed, and he joined Levante.
I hated him.
Did you? Why is that?
Because he wore number 2 on his shirt.
Ah, I quite like that. Isn't that fun, having a striker?
No, it's not right.
No!
It's not right.
I'm not sure if it was a Levante or if it maybe was at Wigan when he went, or even at Sevilla, but I remember him wearing number 2.
And you're thinking, you're a striker, son, don't do this. Anyway, so he goes to Levante, and I don't really know the reason for this, but he had a clause that meant that they were due more money if he gets 19 goals.
Right.
He got to 18 and then got a mysterious injury.
It's a weirdly specific number.
It's a very strange 20 goals
or 15, like a roundish number.
There must
have
been some reason for it, but they just stopped scoring goals.
Magnificent, God-fearing Costa Rican in goal.
They certainly did.
Kaylin Navas.
Pura Vida. Right
at the top.
So Levante had spent $500,000 on players in the previous 4 years or something like that.
Yeah.
And managed by Juan Ignacio Martinez, a.k.a. Jim.
Jim. I just love the fact they've got a manager called Jim.
Who is Pepe Bordalás's cousin.
Yeah.
I did not know that.
Managerial genius runs in the family. I think they have actually faced off on opposite benches at some point over the last decade. I think they did face each other, those two.
I did not know that.
But yeah, he hasn't done much since, old Jim, has he?
No,
I'm not sure
where
he is now. Drifted off the scene.
But yeah, so there were lots of other storylines in this season. It wasn't just about Jose against Pep or Real Madrid against Barcelona. There were loads of other fascinating things, like obviously Malaga getting into the Champions League. They finished fourth.
And being a genuinely good team. I remember Santi Cazorla scoring a wonderful free kick at the Bernabeu with them. They were, you know, and as I said, they built well. And Tulalan was wonderful that season. He seems to have totally disappeared. But that season he played really, really well. They had creativity. They went for teams. They had a lot of the ball. They put Isco much closer to the forwards, and arguably with the league title that Isco won with Real Madrid in 2016, this was his best season. Right? He was absolutely brilliant. And yeah, there were a lot of, I mean, you know, as I say, you've got the beginning of the Diego Simeone era, which ends with them winning the UEFA Cup, and ends with them getting to the final day with
Europa
a chance
League.
Of getting in the Champions. Getting a Champions League place. It just brilliant all the way through. And it was also the season, my particular favourite moment, of Ever Banega breaking his own foot.
I mean,
by leaving the handbrake off the car rolls away, he tries to stop it with his foot.
Whenever someone manages to run themselves over, it's always it's going to be
impressive.
A highlight, isn't it?
You mentioned Atletico Madrid winning the Europa League. They beat Athletic Club in the final.
We've got to talk about Bielsa, haven't we? Of course.
The madman. And I remember asking Iker Muniain once, say, is Bielsa as mad as he looks? And Muniain looking at me, grinning and saying, no, he's madder.
I mean,
and that basically summed them up.
This was probably the best to watch
Athletic team that we've seen recently.
And I'm not sure why, but I recently went and watched back some extended highlights of their victory at Old Trafford.
Oh, the 3-2. That was such a good game.
It's unbelievable. I mean, they just tore United to bits. And there was that footage that came out, well, the recording of his team talk, because of course they get to 2 finals and they lose them both, and it's his team talk. I'm not sure if it's after the first final or the second final, where the discussion is wonderful, because it's Bielsa, it's classic Bielsa. It's talking about the way that you let yourselves down, but you should be proud of the things that you did, and talking about the fans, and you get the feeling that Bielsa really does believe in those kind of very old fashioned concepts. And the way they played for a year, it's true the burnout was terrible. It's true that players were sick of him by the end. I mean, that is true.
Mm.
But the fondness while it was happening and the sense that this was totally transforming, because this wasn't a team that was supposed to... not. It wasn't just they weren't supposed to play this well. They weren't even supposed to play in this manner.
Mm.
And they were just fabulous.
Mm. There were some interesting things going on at the other end of the table, not least Real Zaragoza's startling and extraordinary salvation from relegation, winning 8 of their last 11 matches.
It was absolutely unbelievable, and as it turned out, it was indeed unbelievable. There was a famous chant, Manolo Jimenez, the manager, Jimenez, Jimenez, ¿qué cojones tiene? Jimenez, Jimenez, what bollocks you have.
Yep. Big balls.
And they went to celebrate this at the cathedral, and so the fans are outside chanting, Jimenez, Jimenez, what bollocks you have. I'm not sure how, you know, how the priest felt about this. But anyway, as it turned out, of course, this is the title run in one game in particular, but I think it's more than that.
Relegation run in.
Relegation run in. Relegation run in. That is still under investigation for match fixing. And those that incredible run of Zaragoza results clearly was indeed too good to be true.
It's such a shame when things that just seem like a really positive, totally amazing thing turn out to be quite depressing.
Yeah. The side that did go down were Villarreal, who had finished fourth the season before. They were in the Champions League.
In the Champions League, and they were like a sort of a model club in a lot of ways.
Well, that's the thing that was so striking about it, is that that's exactly right. They didn't seem like a club that you could see underlying problems. It was a total shock that they went down. They didn't actually seem to do a huge amount wrong, even in the season they went down.
By the way,
couldn't get results.
Here are some of the players that were in the Villarreal squads that year, just to reflect. You know, the old too good to go down thing, they sort of personified too good to go down. You had Bruno, of course, before his awful injury problems. Musacchio at the back, Marchena, Nilmar, De Guzman, Cani, Marcos Senna captaining the side, Borja Valero. So you had a midfield three of Marcos Senna, Borja Valero, Bruno, Cani there as well, Giuseppe Rossi, who was scoring goals. Just so many good players, and yet they got relegated.
And they shouldn't have. I mean, it really is as simple as that. They shouldn't have. They shouldn't have gone down. They were, and even through that season, I remember all the way through the season sort of thinking, they're not that awful.
Mm.
They're going to come out of this at some point, and they just sort of never did. I think it might be partly, and I don't know how much I buy into this kind of narrative, but you sometimes get this from people, and I got this from people this year at Villarreal as well, when they started to see 2011-12 as a mirror of what's happened to this year and the risk that they would go down, partly because by not being used to a relegation battle, maybe that is what will condemn you to losing it.
Mm. They finished a point from safety. Granada were the side that were just above them, and Sporting and Rathing also going down.
Rathing again?
Yes.
Yeah, another super season in which Rathing got relegated.
Is this the season of Ali Said? I think it might be.
Yes. It is
not
the
certain, but
so this was the start of their...
Yeah.
Drop through the divisions. Disappearing owner. Yeah.
The top goal scorer was Lionel Messi, as we mentioned, who scored 50 La Liga.
So that's a nice round number.
Goals.
50.
Five, yeah, not 0. 19. Imagine if he'd been on a deal for 49. Yeah, like, there's no way going to get to this.
So Ronaldo not far behind him on 46.
I mean, that is absurd.
96 goals between the two of them. And then I think if you add up the rest, Falcao on 24, Higuain on 22, Benzema on 21, Llorente on 17, Soldado on 17. That's not even as many as Messi and Ronaldo.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So there we go. Quite extraordinary. Depor, Celta and Valladolid coming up to replace.
There you are. The Galician resurgence with Depor and Celta coming up. Yes. Coming up that year.
So there we go. That was a super season, 2011-2012.
So yes. I really liked that season.
Yes.
Enjoyed it.
No, it was true as well. It was the first time, because I was coming to Spain. I hadn't moved here since, but I was coming over and doing some work for Real Madrid TV before I came here. So it was one of the seasons where I was sort of working in Spanish football for the first time. And it was fascinating to see. And Real Madrid winning was a good year to get into it.
And not long after that, TSFP was born. Yes. Now that was a super season.
I'll tell you what, that should be our next series.
Classic episodes, where we look back at some of our
podcast,
best episodes.
Which obviously means that we don't have to look back, we just play them
clip
again.
Clip time.
Yeah. There you go, clip show. It reminds me, there's a great Simpsons episode where they just do this musical of clip show, because let's face it, here we go.
Well, we're not going to do
that. We don't do that, because we're better than that.
We put time and effort into providing this worthwhile paid-for content.
We did put out an episode of clips last summer, I think, but that was like an anniversary thing, so that was different.
Yes. Yeah. Anyway, so thanks for joining us through this look back at some super seasons on patreon.com/TSFD.
It's been a super summer.
It has, and we're going to think of a new series now.
Any suggestions welcome, by the way.
Yeah,
we've got loads of good ideas.
We've got plenty of good ideas, but we're always welcome to suggestions as well. There will be a new TSFP Presents out very, very soon. But yeah, thanks for joining us, and we'll speak again shortly. Adios.
Cheerio.
Bye.